Let us cultivate the altruistic motivation, seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite kind mother sentient beings. With that kind of bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching. I believe that we are seeking Buddhahood or complete enlightenment for the sake of both self and others. That being said, if we look at our present situation, we are all trapped in samsara or cyclical existence. And we have been wandering in different states of samsara for a very, very long time. So we really need to find a way or means by which we can free ourselves and all other beings from the state of samsara. We must understand that our being in samsara for such a long time has, in a sense, nothing to do with other people or other sentient beings. But that what I mean is, it's not as if other people don't like us and they somehow put us in samsara. Okay, nobody can do that. But the reason why all of us have been in samsara for such a long time is basically because within our own state of mind, we have got what is called this ignorant conception of grasping at self. So we all do. We grasp at self, which is, as a matter of fact, an ignorant conception. So because of that grasping, all of us are wandering in different parts of samsara. If we ask ourselves or anybody else, would we like to be a slave, serving a master, none of us would really like to do that. But even in the case of slaves, their slavery is only confined to this lifetime. So basically, they spend a whole life, being a slave, serving, a certain master. But once they leave this world behind, you see, they may not necessarily have to be a slave in the next life and, life after that. But to use the same metaphor, when we look at how we have become slaves of our grasping at self, you know, we have been its slave for many, many lifetimes. You see, if we really hate and dislike so much to be a slave, even for a short period of time or even for one lifetime, how much more should we be really be concerned and be unhappy to be a slave for many lifetimes of this grasping at self? So we really need to seriously consider this situation. So if we really don't want to be a slave of grasping itself, so we say, okay, enough is enough. You know, this is how it has been all this time, but I do not want to be a slave anymore. Okay? If that's what we really, feel, then we have to find a way or a means by which we can free ourselves from grasping at self.
So that the Karigogur Sena, Anne, Ranji Lepi, Danzi Maru, but the Rankan is a Pungu emitting ever some tiny that the Shen the Hakobashel.
So, in order to liberate ourselves from this kind of slavery, being a slave of grasping at self, of course, the first thing we need to do is we really have to contemplate in many different ways how being a slave of this grasping is very detrimental. It is not a good thing. You see, how being a slave of grasping at self brings us too much suffering, too many problems. So that may be easy thing to say, then, you know, really to, you know, feel that. We really need to contemplate a lot. We need to do a lot of analysis or analytical thinking to be able to understand and see for ourselves that grasping at the self is our real enemy. It has enslaved us for such a long time. So our real enemy is nobody else. It's not out there, but it is inside us. It is the grasping at the self. So to be able to feel that, recognize that, it's not an easy job. We need to do a lot of contemplation, a lot of analytical thinking.
And the Ranata Mendeberry not so much. Ranta yin, you good was. Mendeberry, some condition in a human condition in it. And the summer, and the Rana Chumba in a rank, Dunsy Maruba, the Chevre, Yena Yunga, the Yinjushi, Dunsy Maruba, the Yin and Nation. That to say you have it, Santongres.
So all the things going wrong in the universe. That both self and others experience, any kind of suffering, any kind of problem that we can name it or we can't name it, is primarily because of our grasping at self. See, all the problems and bad things happening to us that we don't want is because of my own grasping at self, one's own grasping at self. Why there is so much misery in other people's life is because of their own grasping at self. So basically what it really comes down to is that all kinds of misery that both self and others go through is due to this particular grasping at self. So I'm going to take a little more time explaining how this grasping at self is a real culprit, you know, is responsible for many things going wrong in our and others' lives, and I would like you to pay close attention to what I say.
You have to summon Luther. rang les an shumres.
Let me say this first, that when we fall sick, or that when we face obstacles in life, when we face any kind of problems, these are the results of our own karmic actions, our own karmas.
Rang les le kar savin ta le me give le savin ti wan kene le ti wan pen ta le me give le ha ko ro wa chra so a kya badam kuma ko ya ta ta ma ge me ge chu ni do wa ta chama lo ta ye la ne pe ta ye la ne pe ri kan de ji sha bi ne ti me give le res.
So what kind of karma are we talking about? Of course, it has to be negative or bad karma, right? And so I'm sure that now, I mean, everybody has a sense of what is a bad karma, you know. If you kill someone, that is a bad karma. If you steal, you know, things from others, that's a bad karma. So basically, we know there are those fundamental negative karmic actions we often talk about, 10 negativities of body, speech, and mind. So those are examples of bad karmas. So now we could ask ourselves, okay, how come we do bad karmas? Who's making us do that? Or what is instigating us to do that? You see, what motivates us, if you ask that question, what really motivates us to do bad karmas is our own deluded state of mind. So delusions are behind, so to speak, the bad karmas.
Ani dechay kita temu sungguh na pentan dechay lebih cahaya ini na dechay tang ani kono ni bete dangsi marik bete lesungar es.
So what kind of delusions are we talking about? Of course, there are, you know, many delusions in us, but often we talk about three fundamental delusions we call three poisons. We talk about attachment, dechay. We talk about hatred, shena, and we talk about ignorance, marigpa. Now, all of these are bad. There's nothing good here. But that being said, attachment and hatred, they do arise from ignorance. So ignorance is the real source of all other forms of delusion. So the point I'm trying to make here is our grasping at self, in Tibetan called Thakzin Marigpa, grasping at self is the root delusion. It is the source delusion, meaning that all other types of delusion, you know, arise from it.
Yamana control wang shigyar ni yamana temu gong shigyar tsum karu kelin do sa sa ye nyumusun yo kunya han ni de rang ke ta sengi gen ne ba shigyar de tsum bu thon ni shigyar is.
So if we look from this kind of a, how should I say, theoretical perspective, each of us has got the three poisonous delusions. So any kind of negativities we do, negative karmas, which basically hurt others, you know, has something to do with, you know, at least one of these delusions. Either we do a negative karma because of our attachment, attachment is our underlying motivation, or hatred is an underlying motivation, or all ignorance is. See, so these three delusions are the motivating factors and instigating us to do bad karmas.
The catch you wonky, Miss Segre, the catch you wonky Kumakuri, the catch you wonky Lohim Segre, the catch you wonky Tuxing, the catch you wonky Ta, we give it late Kangatan Dusin, the catch you wonky one Sony, and she had the Antana Yingajin once in Soneta, then the Mambon to us.
I think we can find plenty of examples how each of these delusions could be underlying motivation, right? Out of detachment, you know, we go to the extent of killing someone. You know, if that fulfills our need. Out of attachment, we go and steal things which belong to other. Out of attachment, you know, we commit adultery. Out of attachment, we go and, you know, deceive others, just lying through our teeth. You know, out of whatever, you just name it, out of jealousy, out of arrogance, you know, out of some particular kind of a delusion, when we find ourselves engaging in a negative karma. So such actions we perform with that kind of a motivation, a delusional motivation leading us to do a particular kind of a negative action, karma, that's what we call, you know, migewa, negativity. So once we accumulate or do that kind of a bad karma, that bad karma only brings what we call unpleasant ripening outcome or results.
So that thing is that how come the was rank that the make that late and the nami karnyo in the moas jale nyawala sigu tenru sigu arteng eson sigu are mata dungin na sopaji mil seven in ata ne nasama ta na yigi chi ta dungin mando ki momo nang nyong do was tenzu ganga sawe sungse de ta dangji mari pali sung yomo ni sung de.
So the point I'm trying to make here is that, you know, any particular delusion or some delusions, combination of delusions, become an underlying motivation, and then we find ourselves doing a negative karma or negative karmas, and which bring unpleasant outcomes. That's why the whole thing we talk about suffering in samsara, right? The greatest suffering is in the hell, in the hungry ghost world, in the animal world. Right? All of those sufferings are the results of bad karmas or negative karmas. Now, even if we are born as a human being, which is like relatively speaking, you know, a happy situation, but we have our own set of problems, you know. Even as a human being, you know, not being able to enjoy our human life, but, you know, a lot of sicknesses befall us, you know, and that is also a result of negative karmic action. One of the greatest Indian Buddhist masters by the name of Acharya Chandrakirti, in his supplement to the Middle Way or Madhyamika Avatar states, as Geshe-la quoted the stanza from his memory, that we should try to understand how all forms of delusion arise from a particular delusion, which is technically called the view of transitory collection. Okay, that's a big word there. But what it really means is grasping at self. Okay, all other forms of delusion arise from our own grasping at self, which is called the view of transitory collection or transitory view for simplicity's sake. We should be able to see that, tongne, having seen it, understanding it, then we should make efforts to uproot it, to get rid of it.
Dan ni intu nanjur bai dan go ko shi dati ta bi ku nanjur la chen ki ta chen na ba ta ba du ki ina an ne tang bu ran ji li bi dang ji de pa me ba zai ta ji gu le kan.
So then what the yogis or the meditators nanjur ba do, by understanding that, by seeing that fact for themselves, you know, how all delusions arise from their own grasping at self, so their job, the job they do, the yogis or the meditators, is they try to first get rid of their own grasping at self from their state of mind. And here, of course, we need to understand that there's no any kind of some medication, you know, pills or some capsules or medicine we can take to kind of get rid of grasping itself. And there's no surgery, you know, that can be done and we can take out the grasping itself from our system.
Yeah.
But if that's the thing, then our life will be much easier, right? Wouldn't it be? And then of course the rich people have the advantage, you know, so they will be free first from the grasping itself.
Tā yā tī sōng yā sī. Tā kārī gu gā sī nā, tā dāng fī mā rī bā kō mē bā zhō yā lē, anī tōng bā nī tēng tō gu gu yā lē sī.
So if all those methods are not working, right, you cannot do surgery and, you know, remove this grasping itself from our system, we cannot go and take some kind of medication or pills to treat it, then what can we do, really? And the only method that works here is if we develop insight into what is called emptiness, shunyata, voidness, sunata in Pali. And so if we understand that, if we realize what emptiness is, that realization counteracts our grasping itself. Now we might also hold this kind of notion, okay, so basically it means I need to do some kind of a spiritual practice. So that means I'm going to keep on reciting mantras. Okay, I'm going to keep on chanting some prayers. Well, if our motivation is to counteract that grasping itself, if we recite mantras and we recite prayers, that might be a little bit helpful. But simply mantra recitation and prayer recitation is not going to uproot grasping itself. I mean, just keep aside, you know, mantra recitation and, you know, prayer chanting and all of that, you know. You know, we know how precious, you know, love and compassion as attitudes are, that we really need to cultivate them. These have a great spiritual, you know, values. That being said, even the great love and great compassion are no real antidotes to grasping itself. Even the love and compassion cannot, you know, combat with, if you like, cannot counteract grasping itself. Here I would like to quote the words of another great Indian Buddhist master by the name of Acharya Dharmakirti, and Geshe-la quoted the lines from his memory. He said, love and so forth, or etc. is the package where all other things not listed are included. They do not counteract grasping itself. Why? Because they are not the antithesis of grasping itself. Okay. So love is not antithetical to grasping itself. Compassion is not antithetical to grasping itself. So therefore, they do not, you know, contradict, if you will, the modes of apprehension of grasping itself. So therefore, love and compassion are not antidotes. They are not direct antidotes to, real direct antidotes to our grasping itself. So then what kind of antidote do we really need in order to counteract grasping itself? Right, just in the nature, right, if the things which are antithetical to each other, which do not agree with each other, like heat and cold, they are, you know, antithetical to each other. So we need that kind of antidote, something that does not agree with the mode of apprehension, you know, by the self, by the grasping itself.
Yes.
Yes. I would like to ask you a question, you know, whether in your culture, that's his point, I mean, do you see that a raven and an owl, these two birds, you know, they are not friendly with each other?
One place.
They cannot be at the one place, you know, they cannot live together. A raven and an owl.
Completely opposite, is it? I mean, they fight.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But
how about heat and cold? Right, they cannot coexist, right?
Yeah.
Okay, then forget about the raven and the owl, you know. So, you know, at least we know that heat and cold cannot coexist, you know.
That carries in danzi da damit of hirini buti chadani nan chagaris.
So just as, you know, heat and cold cannot coexist, in the same way, the wisdom realizing emptiness as it is. Sometimes we use the term selflessness. Okay? The wisdom that realizes selflessness as it is and our ignorant conception of grasping of self, they cannot coexist. Okay, they are not friends. So they directly contradict each other's mode of apprehension of things.
Okay. Yes.
How about compassion and anger? Do their modes of apprehension agree with each other or compatible? Can you have both anger and compassion at the same time in your mind?
Only
your
mother can.
Only who? Mother can? Even in the case of mothers, you know, when they have the love or the compassion, you see, they really don't have, at that particular moment in mind, they have anger, you see. But when they have anger, they don't have those two attitudes. But a mom can pretend to be angry, but that doesn't mean she's really angry, right? That's a different matter, right? A mom can realize, she can act like, she can put on this great show, like she's really mad with you, you know, but that does not necessarily mean she's angry, you know.
So those sentences, okay.
So we say that love and anger, you know, cannot coexist. They cannot arise in the same moment of mind or consciousness, okay, at the same time. Okay. Anyway, you just want to think about that. So in the same way, the wisdom realizing selflessness and grasping at the self, they are antithetical to each other. So they cannot coexist. So what we're saying is that grasping at self and the wisdom realizing selflessness cannot exist simultaneously at the same time. But we are not saying that they are equally powerful. Okay? In terms of strength of the power, they are not just the same. The point I'm trying to get across to you here is that as we cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness or emptiness, right, it starts maybe small, but as we cultivate, we can enhance it, you know, tremendously to the extent that it really becomes a very powerful antidote to counteract grasping itself. Let me give you another example how darkness and illumination cannot coexist, right? At night, it's dark, right? But then in the morning, when the sun started to shine, you see, then the darkness started to vanish or disappear. So that means sunlight or the sun illumination or the brightness and darkness cannot coexist. When one comes, the other must go. To the extent sun shines, you know, more brightly, it's to that extent the darkness, you know, is eliminated, right? The sun shines and then it becomes really bright and brighter. It is to that extent that the degree of darkness, if you will, will be diminished.
pe mangpo ji xie yu sarang zu ali te danda kwaya kyu de xie min shi de.
So I think I gave you plenty of examples so that you'll be able to work with, you know, one of these examples. Just think about, you know, how certain things cannot coexist.
That tenda tevati. Ane dangji te meba dangji te meba zongki gar dami to khere re ta ti imba da sam chawe ta ne chimbra mas.
So my key point here is that the wisdom realizing selflessness or emptiness is it counteracts our grasping at self. It is the antidote to our grasping at self. So the message we should get from this is that each of us must, you know, make efforts to cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness. So as we cultivate that wisdom and we enhance it further, this particular wisdom, can uproot the grasping itself from within our mind. So once we are able to uproot the grasping itself, then all other delusions must go. You see, no other delusions can exist in our mind once that grasping itself is knocked out. Another great Indian Buddhist master by the name of Acharya Aryadeva, the main disciple of Arya Nagarjuna, said, as Geshe-la quoted the line from his memory, Timu chombe chombarjo, if you destroy ignorance, Timu, you will destroy it all, meaning all other delusions. And the tool or the technique we use to do that, to destroy our ignorance, is to cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness. So now, what are the ways by which we can cultivate the wisdom realizing selflessness, if you ask? You know, one of the most important things for us to do is to study and try to understand the concept of dependent arising, Tendal, Pratit Samutpat, or dependent arising or dependent origination, you know. So it's very important for us to understand this particular concept. Again here, to quote the words of great Indian master Acharya Chandrakirti in the Madhyamika Avatar, supplement to the Middle Way, Kesha quoted lines from the memory, with the reasoning of dependent arising of Pratit Samutpath, that we can cut through the all this network of distorted views. And Manjushri Lama Tsongkhapa or Jerumbuche, Kyawa Losang Thapa, also said in the Three Principal Paths, therefore, one should make efforts to understand dependent arising. So what does the concept of dependent arising involve, if you ask? When we say phenomena or phenomenon, by that what we mean is something that really exists. Okay, something existent is called a phenomenon or dharma sometimes. Okay. So if something exists, it must exist dependently. It is a dependent arising. How? This could be understood in several different ways. That, you know, it exists in dependence upon, not independence, if that's what you are hearing, you're hearing it wrong. In dependence upon other causes and conditions. Okay? All that phenomena exists in relation to other phenomena. It's called relativity. Okay? So that's how both objective phenomena and subjective phenomena exist. No,
I'm
So the concept of dependent arising gives us this understanding that anything that exists, it does not exist from its own side or objectively. It only exists dependently, either depending upon some other causes or conditions, or it exists in relation to some other phenomenon. Okay? And so which means that there is no such thing as objective existence. Okay? And but then another, like, few other things I want to talk about here is, like, often we hear about how phenomena are just like an illusion, a magical creation, just like a magical creation, juma, tabo. Or they are just like we see things in a dream, right? Now people sometimes miss the important words there, right? Then they say, oh yeah, you know, things are just dreams, or things are illusions, so okay, they don't matter really, you know? Which means we are really not understanding what's being said. We're not saying that phenomena are just, you know, just dreams, or what we see in the dreams, or phenomena are just illusions. We are saying like they are likened to tabu. The different word tabu means they are just like an illusion or a magical creation, just like something we see in a dream.
But this like say the drop because the thing about the sound tongue beyond this.
So just like is an important word here, you know, which means that we are not saying that phenomena and dreams are, you know, are identical, or that phenomena and illusions are identical. We are not saying they're just likened to, you know, an illusion or what we see in a dream. Let me ask you, you know, this question, you know, just to check your understanding what I just explained. If someone says that, you know, a so-and-so looks just like a Peter, you know, what understanding, I mean, you get from this? This means that he's really not Peter, he looks like a Peter? Or what does it mean to you if somebody says, so-and-so looks like a Peter?
Peter look like Peter,
because I think it's a crazy thing to say, like, you know, Peter really looks like a Peter himself, right? I mean, what do you mean? Like, Peter looks like Peter himself, you know?
Then they say,
So the point I'm trying to make here is, you know, limited knowledge and little knowledge is a dangerous thing here. Okay, because some people, they kind of know something. It's not like they don't know anything. But then they kind of assume that they know everything, or they really heard it correctly. And then as Geshe-la was trying to demonstrate, then they go just run their mouth like anything like this, you know. And that is a dangerous thing.
So the that kandi chi ne yeba kandi chi ne ko rang ne ma ju ba chi ma to khora ngo ni ju ba chan ne ba ta kare to ku chin te sa te ju te te ne ya go.
So now trying to, you know, restate one of the key points here is, if something exists, if something is existent, if something is a phenomenon, right, that it cannot exist from its own side. Okay, that it is a dependent arising, meaning that its existence is dependent upon some other things or some other phenomena. Okay, some other aspects of phenomena, if you like. So I'm just kind of opening a little window here for you to be able to consider and, you know, think about these matters.
No.
it is said that if, you know, let alone like developing insight into what emptiness is, if we develop some kind of a positive attitude or a state of doubting in relation to the emptiness, we say that, you know, what is it, you know, if our doubt pertaining to the emptiness is what we call a doubt inclined towards what the reality is, it's a factual kind of doubt, we really don't know what emptiness is, but we think, I think that's what it really is. If our doubt is more inclined towards the positive angle, towards what emptiness really is, that much itself is a powerful state of mind that can shatter, you know, our grasping at self. Okay, this is what great Indian master Aryadeva states in his 400 stanzas on the middle path called Chatukshetak.
अरे तसन सवा कंचे समझ
So he said that merely having that kind of a positive doubt, if I can use that word, you know, can shatter, you know, your world of samsara. You see, grasping at self. So with the intention of benefiting one and all, you see, whether we are new students or old students, so I thought those are important things to share, so consider that as my preliminary teaching
today.
Now, returning to this wonderful text called Personal Advices from Kadamba Geshe's, one of the things we have been talking for a couple of weeks is the need to cultivate bodhicitta, the altruism, altruistic mind of enlightenment. And in order to do that, we have to do meditation, meditational practice. But to do meditational practice, we have to know what to meditate on. And there are two very well-known meditational techniques to cultivate bodhicitta. And that's what we were talking about. And the two popular techniques that we could use in our meditation to cultivate bodhicitta are, first is called six causes and one result technique. And the second one is called equalizing and exchanging self for others. So last week we were talking about these six causes and one result technique to cultivate bodhicitta. And I talked about the need to cultivate sense of equanimity or balanced state of mind called tangyom, which is preparing the groundwork. It's not one of the six causes, but it is the preparatory work we must do. And so having cultivated sense of equanimity, now the first cause is to cultivate the recognition of all beings as having been our mothers, kind mothers, right? That's the cause number one. So I believe you have given some thoughts to it, and we all must do. As important as it is to listen to Dharma teaching, it's perhaps even more important for us to contemplate the meaning of the teachings, right? If we simply get into the habit of listening to teachings and not contemplating, then we are not going to make much of a progress. So of the six causes, the first cause is cultivating the recognition of all beings as having been our kind mothers. That once we really have done that well, that leads us to the second cause, which is remembering their kindness, right? If they have been our kind mothers, then they have done so many kind things, you know, to us. So we try to remember that.
Tali re mahe this mahe gondi chani ali rang chevala changa me ba chev ma shi ti ye ba tinge ba do sam na tang ni ti chevala rang chevala chang me ba ti sam tong gom gur si la in ba ti ne ba ke chem cha ver.
And I must have made this point and I want to emphasize it. In order to cultivate the recognition of all beings as having been our mothers, how that idea being really feasible, we really have to contemplate and do analytical thinking about the possibility of life before and life after, right? This is not the only life we ever had. You know, we have been reborn countless times. Okay? So there have been many lifetimes that we have been through. So then we see the connection, you see. We see all the dots and we can connect all of them to say that, okay, how all beings have some connection with us and they could have been, or they have been, as a matter of fact, our mothers many times. So once we really, you know, get this idea, the recognition of all beings as our mothers, not just the idea, but the experience under our belt, as you might say, then all other things will follow from it. You see, it will be easier to remember their kindness and, you know, all other things. You see, so this is a, so to speak, a very critical, you know, thing, that how we have this connection with all sentient beings, and so we really need to do a lot of analytical thinking here.
That tea, some of the train, that the Yul Karasan, that could Rale, Mother Sukadi Jimbushan, Tapa, train lawyer, train lawyer, the Sampang.
So, as we remember the kindnesses of mother sentient beings, then what would be a rational thing? Next one is how can we repay their kindness, right? So, that's the cause number three, right? Remembering their kindness is the second, leading to repaying their kindnesses. So even we think of the normal kind of conventions we have, right? If somebody give us a nice present, right? What is the convention? We have to give something back. Right? You just can't keep on taking presents. Right? You have to give a return present. I think Christmas is not that far off, and probably, you know, we already think about it, you know, what kind of gifts I should buy, you know, for my friends and families, you see.
And I think
that you have this feeling, oh, okay, last year, you know, such and such gave me such and such gift, and now I must buy something to, like, you know, it's almost like a payback, you know, I have to buy something in return for them, right? If, you know, any of our friends, you know, has invited us for, let's say, 1 or 2 week vacation, so they pay for everything. They have taken care of all our needs, right? But don't you think we will really remember how kind and generous they have been, you know, this particular friend, right? I mean, that's a normal feeling, right? We would think about that. Oh my God, my friend has treated me so well.
That wrong, Mati. Mati ini nyemat cik mat dimca cik mat dawa cik lo cik mari. Kaya susu aja mesti korang sang tane. Kadi cang yoris.
So if we, it is the right thing to do, and we feel the kindness of our friend who treat us so well, so generously, so kindly for a week or two vacation, then how much more would it be true for us to remember the kindness of our mother who has been caring for us whole life? It's not a 2 week mother. It's not a, you know, 2 month mother. It's a whole lifetime mother, right, who has been worrying like anything and caring for us, you
see.
So in the Tibetan like way of thinking, you know, we feel that a mom has been very kind to us for the whole life, and we always remember that. You see, there is no any other way of thinking beyond that. But in this particular culture, right, perhaps you might feel that, yes, I agree, my mom has been very kind to me until I was 18, and then after 18, you know, I was on my own, you know. So I'm just, you know, I took care of myself after 18. I mean, do you sometimes feel that way or think that way? I think if that's the kind of attitude or thinking somebody is holding, I would say that's a wrong thinking. Even if you get out of the nest at 18 or whatever, but you should still recognize that your mom is still worrying and concerned and caring about you. Doesn't matter, you left the nest, you know, but still mom is always thinking about you.
Yeah,
I think if you look around in our neighborhoods or the society we live in, I think we'll find plenty of examples how for mom, you see, the age does not matter. How old you are or you get older, you see, if you are in a trouble or problem and mom could do something, she is ready to help. It doesn't matter how old you are, you see, or how big you have grown, you know.
Yeah, that's karomasi, you see. So take care of her, you know, her children. Okay, that in this. That in this, I know Tani. Then this, I know Tani, never do. The lawyer to some Congress.
So, anyway, I'm just kind of, you know, to mention one or two things here, but we have to find in many different ways to feel how kind Mother Sentient Beings have been to us, and then what can we do to repay their kindness. And one of the things I feel like in the Western sort of speak culture, not maybe the present culture today's, not culture from pastoral, now maybe in the present culture, it seems like children do not seem to respect their parents that much. I think it's really important to pay the due respect to parents. So if you know, one has not been nice to one's parents and one's parents are no more with one, okay, so there's nothing you can do much, right? But you should, at least we should regret for what we have not been able to do to repay their kindness. So if you are lucky that your parents are still with you or alive, or you could visit them, then I would say, you know, do even small little things just to repay their kindness. You know, if I have my mom and dad alive today, and I will be happy to at least make some cups of tea, you know, for them, or do whatever little things I could do to serve them, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, that
So how can we repay their kindness? Of course, first we have to understand the underlying principle here, right? What do they want? They want peace and happiness, goodness. They do not want any problem or misery or suffering, right? So what can we do to, you know, bring happiness to do that, I mean, to them, and to minimize their suffering, or, you know, what can we do? Of course, we will find many different ways to repay their kindness. Of course, sometimes it could be, you know, providing them material, you know, resources that, you know, brings them comfort. If we could do that, or that we, you know, render services to them, serve them, you know, that might fulfill their needs. But of course, the perhaps the more important, best ways to repay their kindness is how can we, how do you say, we can really truly contribute to their happiness and minimize their suffering.
Dungi ta treva ta, deva ta demba ki sosu chegu sambashini, ane kama tu tangai, sunye tamki dri chegu sambashini, shevi ina taiki raya gores.
So at least, you know, we start with cultivating this positive attitude that, you know, I really am going to think positively for all kind mother sentient beings. I really want to wish them every peace and happiness and goodness in the world, and wish them not have any kind of problem and suffering. At least we start cultivating such positive thinking, you know.
No.
So then, next we need to cultivate what is called Yung Chamba, which literally means cultivating the kind of love that enables us to see them as being very dear and near to ourselves. Okay, so we cultivate the recognition of all beings as having been our kind mothers. We remember their kindness. We think of repaying their kindness. Now the fourth cause out of the six causes is to cultivate this, let me call it, you know, because I don't want to repeat the whole sentence 100 times here. That will be a tongue twister for me. Let's call it special love, okay, to be able to see all of them as being very dear and near to us. So how do we cultivate this kind of love? Of course, you know, we have trained our mind to an extent that now we're able to see all beings as our kind mothers, very dear to us, near to us, and we truly, sincerely wish them to be happy, to be endowed with peace and happiness, right? So we go through all these thought processes, if you will, like how nice it would be if these kind mother sentient beings find real happiness and peace. May they be able to find real peace and happiness. May I be able to contribute, do whatever I can to bring them real peace and happiness. So then the same kind of thinking goes with cultivating compassion, right? Compassion is a state of mind wishing in others to be free from suffering. So when we cultivate great compassion for mother sentient beings, we truly wish them to be free from problems and suffering. And here also we think that how nice it would be if mother sentient beings are free from suffering in its causes. May they be free from suffering in its causes. May I be able to shoulder the responsibility to do that. You see, it's really important for us to feel that personal sense of responsibility. May I be able to carry on this responsibility to bring peace and happiness to mother sentient beings, to help them get rid of suffering.
Ta shamba ta ni gaje re ti jene ya seje la shuri me pa kinge ba seje tham che le mi bi she ga ma rang dai che le mi gur ma to that pha yu na te ni ga mar da sura tu shamba go ya shamba chem re ga ma le.
So once again I want to stress this important point: as we cultivate great love and great compassion here, we have to often check with our attitude whether we have any biased attitude here, right? We could be cultivating love and compassion, but then we might get sidetracked, like, okay, love and compassion for this number of people. Hello, not that one. You know, also like, how did they get into my list here? No, I'm especially didn't say that. But, you know, don't be biased and discriminated among sentient beings, right? We just have to check with our own biases and, you know, discriminations in our mindset, okay, am I trying to cultivate love and compassion equally towards and for all sentient beings? That's very important. No. So that's the love and compassion are different attitudes, but the way we cultivate them are, you know, more or less the same. You
Mīkwa jīpa rēsī, nāpa māntā jīrī.
Great love and great compassion have the same focus or same objects, but they have different subjective aspects.
Karayasana rēta, mīkwa jī sīngyā thamjī lēmī, shāmbā chīmbu gondī chāni, mīkwa sīngyā thamjī lēmī vāshī. Yī chīmbu gondī chāni, mīkwa sīngyā thamjī lēmī vāshī. Tā yīnā nāmbā tē, shāmbā gondī chāni, bēwā tē dēndē wā nāmbā chīshī.
All sentient beings are the focus of both great love, Mahamaitri, and great compassion, Mahakaruna. So there's no difference in the focus, right? Both attitudes focus on the same thing. But in terms of the subjective experience aspects, they are different. Love is an attitude that wishes sentient beings to be happy. So love is related with happiness. You know, you wish everybody to be happy. Right? Whereas compassion is an attitude, you wish everybody to be free from suffering. See? So in terms of the subjective aspects of this mind, so the attitudes, they are different.
Lakpaya sambha siya te, lak te karay si na, nyama le, lo kumpay di chi ni, simba te le lak singa res, and this lakpaya sambha si.
So now we're going through the six causes for cultivating bodhicitta. We talked about the cause number one is recognition of all beings as having been our kind mothers, remembering their kindness, thinking of repaying their kindness, cultivating great love, cultivating great compassion. Now the cause number six is what we call cultivating special willpower, or in Tibetan called laksam. It's a special thought, literally. What it really means is that, you know, before, you know, our attitude and state of mind was such that we felt like, okay, I don't want to take any responsibility for others, so I cannot do it, right? Now at this point of time we say, okay, I will, you know, take the responsibility upon myself to bring, you know, happiness, true mother sentient beings, to help them free from suffering. So that sense of personal responsibility, we call the willpower, right, is a key.
Sanyi thangki dungye tata, deva thangki tatenpa ta, ngara rang shegu yin samne ta, thaa kye ne, sanku kuru, sosyo kuru cheva tale, pasams.
So as we train our mind here, we really have to feel that, okay, I am going to shoulder the responsibility to, you know, help mother sentient beings find happiness, to help them to be free from suffering its causes. So I'm going to do that, you know. So we take the whole responsibility upon ourselves. So as we train our mind in cultivating this special willpower or the special thought, and then we reach a point where we feel like day in and day out, right, we feel that responsibility. You know, I'm carrying the responsibility to help sentient beings find happiness, to be free from suffering. Then that really kind of, gives rise to bodhicitta or the altruism, the outcome or the result.
And that the Sanskrit singing that you can do that, when around the same day, Shankyu let me watch sing the one. Just a thing is that Shankyu is same thing, I can't even say this, you know, wrong any wrong time, yes, that didn't do but the money is Shankyu same thing you can do, and it's that yes, it turned, wrong in each turned, and it's Sanskrit comes up a shake with.
So those are the six causes, and the one result is the bodhicitta itself. And bodhicitta is a Sanskrit term, which if we split the this term, what we find is bodhi means enlightenment, chitta means mind. So it's a mind focused on enlightenment, and that's what it means. Okay. So when we cultivate bodhicitta, we are focused on, you know, achieving enlightenment for the benefit of all other sentient beings. And when we look at the theoretical definition of what bodhicitta is, it is defined as a primary state of mind, which is characterized or accompanied by two types of aspiration. Okay? Aspiration seeking enlightenment, aspiration seeking enlightenment and aspiration, you know, seeking to benefit others. Okay, so basically what we are doing is we are seeking our own enlightenment as a means to fulfill the end, to benefit others. And I think we will that will do for today, and we will stop there. I have said it 100 times, and I will repeat it again here, that we must cultivate, you know, bodhicitta, love, great love, great compassion, and wisdom realizing emptiness. It's something we have to cultivate. Is it through practice and through meditation? It's not something going to happen on its own. Okay, so we really need to, how to say, do the cultivation practice here. So even if we do not succeed in cultivating bodhicitta, for example, in this lifetime, but we still want to continue our practice so that in our next life, is we are able to, you know, cultivate it. So we have to develop the determination that however long it may take, you see, that maybe next life, many other lifetimes after that, until I'm able to generate the bodhicitta or find enlightenment, I'm going to just continue, you see, my practice. We have to develop that kind of a determination. We have to really keep the long-term perspective. Don't have a high expectation. Okay, you know, I can do it like within the shortest period of time. Then that may not be a good, how to say, an attitude to adopt. We have to think like, it may take, however long it may take, I'm just going to carry on, you know, cultivating bodhicitta and cultivating the wisdom gone beyond. And our practice should not be what we call, metaphorically speaking, should not be like somebody who is trying to show how to swim sitting on a comfortable cushion. You see, like, okay, this is how you should swim. You know, in order to learn swimming, we got to go to the water, right, and then learn it. Not just sit on a comfortable seat and then, you know, do the exercise of swimming. So I'll tell you the story, maybe that'll... So once there was a king, right, he really wanted to learn, I mean, at least he had interest in learning about swimming, how to swim. So he got the best, you know, swimming instructor, right? He invited to the palace, and so he said, okay, I want to learn about swimming, so can you teach me? He said, yes, we need to go to the water, and I'll teach you how to swim. He said, no, just, you know, I just want to stay inside and teach me how to do it. Just teach me the techniques, you know, show me how you swim, right? So then he must have sat on the cushion and he must have done all these things, you know, how you do, whatever, swim, you know, flipping and all kind of stuff. So, I mean, he taught for a long time. So then, at one point of time, the king felt like, okay, now it has been a long time, and he felt like, okay, now I can swim, right? He said, okay, why don't we go out to water today? You know, I want to swim. He said, sure. So then they went to the water, and then the king, he got carried away by the water. So he was shouting at him, like, come and save me, you know, just come, and you got to save me. And then the instructor said, why don't you just try the techniques you learned on the cushion, you know, do that. He said, do the swimming on your, you know, nice throne thing. So that's what we mean, like if we have the sort of a theoretical thing and we never really go into the real situation to practice, it may not work, you know.
Okay.
I have a prayer request for two people who are no more with us. Nick Umadikov and, now this I'm not going to say it right, you have to excuse me, Jang Donggui. So prayers have been requested for them.
Still alive.
Really?
Still alive?
So then I must have been misinformed.
Huh?
So,
who's them?
But this is good news, actually. Huh? Maybe we don't need to pray for him,
Lily's
right?
Brother,
he's alive.
Still alive.
Huh?
Lily, brother.
Ali,
still alive.
Still alive? Oh, yeah, okay.
Well, good news. He's alive.
Other one?
The other one is again, yes, passed away again in 99.
Okay. So that's Ani in the nodding it on.
So Gijal is chuckling over the good news, right? So it's good. I mean, if people are from the out of the list of the deceased, that's good news. Okay, there you go. So let us, you know, bring ourselves together and pray for those who have who are no more with us and who are also with us but have their own set of problems, you know.
Omane be mo mane 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 be अने जाओ ये नो तो चुए बे तीन जी शिव तंबा ने जो कुछ चाहिए तेरे में तो तू जी नो तो ना मेमल हंड्रेड यू मास्टर अने चुए डूंगी की शो पम्प ना जी तीन जी शावन ना इसमें तो जो बात अने अल ने ता ये तीन कम दे दां ये नो मिठी बिग सो था ये ने तीन जी लो सो था ना मेमल हंड्रेड यू मास्टर
Let us dedicate our collective merit for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other great holy beings live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aspirations. May this and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and may beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. In short, we dedicate our merit for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of two types of mental obscuration, and may we all reach complete enlightenment quickly.
Sāje-jīn-dō-mī-dē-bhū-mā-yīn-rā-hū-yā-nā-dā-yīn-lā-sī-yā-vā-yō-yī-dā-gu-rū-rā-mā-mā-dā-lā-kā-mī-yā-dā-yā-mī.